was to try and pay attention to where the man was leading them. She'd asked, of course, but the giant had merely grunted for Kate to be quiet, and she'd had to satisfy herself with what she could glean from their surroundings, which, considering the rain and the dark and the fact that one tree or rock looked pretty much like every other tree or rock, was not much. And so they marched on, along crooked, muddy, tree-choked paths, clambering over boulders, jumping across impromptu streams, steadily climbing and steadily climbing, till Kate decided that wet and tired were just different words for pain. And she forgot about picking trees or rocks to mark her progress, and just lowered her head and let herself be guided by the thud of the man's footsteps and the clinking of the chains that hung from his wrists. And then, suddenly, they stopped. Kate raised her eyes. She saw the outline of a small cabin tucked into the hillside. The man pushed open the door and stepped inside, and Kate and Michael stumbled in after. The air in the cabin was cold and musty. Clearly no one had been there in a long while, but for the first time in what felt like forever, it was not raining on the children. They stood in almost total darkness, listening to the man move about. There was the rasp of a match, and he lit a lantern that hung from the center of the ceiling. Without a word, he turned and busied himself at the fireplace, giving Kate and Michael a chance to inspect their surroundings. There was a wide bed, with a bearskin blanket, on which Emma was already fast asleep. The stone fireplace, where the man was piling up kindling. An old wooden table, with stools and benches. The walls were covered with snowshoes, fishing rods, ice axes, bows and arrows, knives, a long spear, while from the ceiling hung a collection of traps, along with pots and pans of various shapes and sizes. The cabin was small, certainly, but well cared for, and everything one might need was close at hand. Soon, a bright warm blaze had filled the room, and when Kate looked to Michael, she saw he'd climbed onto the bed beside Emma, and was snoring lightly. The man stepped up.
"Hang your clothes by the fire, and keep the curtains closed. The bed is yours."
Then he was gone. With effort, Kate got her brother and sister to stand and take off their sopping wet shoes and clothes. Not bothering to open their eyes, Emma and Michael dropped everything in a puddle on the floor, pulled on the dry, knee-length shirts the man had laid out, then staggered back to bed and crawled under the covers. Kate placed their shoes on the hearth, the clothes she wrung out in a bucket, then draped over a rope she'd found and strung before the fire. She felt herself in some country, past fatigue, as if she would never need sleep again, but, pulling on the last dry shirt, she climbed into bed anyway, just to be next to her brother and sister. Where had the man gone, and who was he? Certainly he was no friend of the Countess, but could they trust him? He was obviously extremely dangerous. She lay there, her thumb and forefinger making tiny, worried circles on her mother's locket. She felt the heaviness of the bearskin blanket and how warm and dry the sheets were against her skin. The rain overhead sounded very far away. She resolved to stay awake till the man returned. Her eyes snapped open. How long had she been asleep? It was still night, still raining, but the man was back. He was sitting on the stone hearth, sawing at the metal cuffs that bonded his wrists, as the firelight played over the long scar running down his face. Now was the time to ask who he was, why he tried to kill the Countess. But Kate just lay there, listening to her brother and sister breathing, listening to the rain on the roof, the soft crackling of the fire, the steady back and forth of the saw cutting through metal. She was so tired. She would just close her eyes for a minute, then she would talk to him. Kate fell into a series of troubled dreams. In the last, she saw an underground city. It rose up in the hollowed-out heart of a great mountain, and the buildings were like none Kate had ever seen. They looked to have been sculpted straight out of the rock, as if the city had not been built so much as excavated. The effect was massive, brutal, and strangely beautiful. Suddenly the ground began to shake and split apart. Buildings crumbled, fires erupted, Then the earth seemed to swallow the city whole. Kate woke, breathing hard, covered in sweat. The fire had gone out. Daylight filtered through the curtains. The chains that had been attached to the man's wrists lay curled beside the hearth. She was alone. Emma's and Michael's clothes were gone from the line. She felt her own. They were dry. She dressed quickly and went outside. It was a shock, stepping into the bright sunlight, and she blinked several times, shielding her eyes. The cabin was perched on the side of a mountain and looked out across the valley. It was a beautiful, cloudless morning. The air felt cool and clean. In fact, were it not for the evidence all around her, the still muddy ground, the rain glistening on the treetops below, her torn and filthy clothes, the dried blood on her hands, she could almost believe that the night and everything that had happened, the storm, the wolves, the sudden appearance of the man, had been no more than a dream. "Morning." Michael was sitting on a rock a few yards away, his notebook balanced on his knee. "Just bringing my journal up to date. Be done in a second." Kate glanced around and saw neither Emma nor the man. "Michael, just a second." Kate closed her eyes and pressed her fingertips to her temples. She needed to think. Were they still going to Westport? If so, where were they now? How far had they walked during the night? The man could tell them, but where was he? And where was Emma? Kate was about to tell Michael to finish his journal later, when her dream, which had faded on waking, suddenly returned. Not in the way dreams usually returned, with vague, disjointed flashes, but exactly, vividly. So she was watching it all again. The underground city, the earth opening up. "Kate!" Michael was shaking her. She blinked and realized she was lying on the ground. Had she fainted again?
"What happened?"
"You... I'm fine." The Countess's words were ringing in her ears. "Did you notice the oldest one? The book has marked her." She was very clearly not fine. But she saw how Michael was staring at her and managed a smile.
"Just stood up too fast. Where's Emma?"
"I don't know," he said, still watching her closely. "She was gone when I got up."
When Emma woke, it was just getting to be dawn. A dim grey light had crept into the cabin. Kate and Michael were still asleep. The man was stomping out the fire, black fossils of logs crumbling as ash billowed around his foot. His arm was bandaged where the wolf had bitten him. She watched as he pulled on a shirt, took a knife, bow, and small quiver from the wall, and, throwing a glance in her direction, left without a word. Immediately Emma got up, dressed, and hurried outside. A heavy morning mist hung over the valley, and she was in time to see the man's large form disappearing into the grey. She padded silently after him. Why she was following the man, Emma couldn't have said. As a rule, she didn't find adults very interesting. In her experience, they were either to be put up with or openly disobeyed. Abraham was all right, she guessed, and Dr. Pym had been interesting, being a wizard and all. But until this man had appeared, there'd never been an adult she'd actually felt drawn to. Emma ducked behind a boulder as the man stopped. He seemed to be listening to something in the fog. A memory was coming back to her. It was from a few years earlier. A rich old man had paid for all the kids in the orphanage to be taken to the zoo. Emma had figured the guy was dying and trying to do something nice so he'd get into heaven. Whatever the reason, that trip to the zoo was easily the greatest day of her life. There were pandas and jaguars and long-necked giraffes and spotted monkeys that whooped and chattered as they fell through the trees. Crocodiles from the Nile that people used to worship. Snow leopards from the Himalaya. Emerald green snakes that could swallow a man whole. Everywhere you turned, there was more to see. But the animal that caught her attention, the one that held her in quiet, rapt amazement, was a lion. He was enormous, twice the size of any of the other lions. His fur was a heavy brownish gold, his face scarred from many battles, and his eyes the deepest, darkest black Emma had ever seen. Clinging to the outer bars of the cage, She had sensed the power and intelligence in him, and further, beneath the stillness, a pure animal violence waiting to erupt. Something about this man reminded her of the lion. She watched as he left the path and melted down into the mist. She waited a moment, then followed. The earth was wet and slippery, and as she braced herself against trees, cascades of raindrops showered onto her head and shoulders. She entered a glade and paused. The man was nowhere to be seen. As she pondered which direction to go, there was movement, and a stag stepped out of the trees. It was tall and strong, with great swept-up antlers. Hidden by branches, Emma held her breath, awed by the beauty of the animal. It stretched out its neck and nibbled at a bush. She wished Kate and Michael were here, Kate especially. Michael would probably have ruined it by saying something stupid about dwarves. The stag suddenly raised up, its whole body taut. It turned to bolt, but just then the man flew out of the mist and landed on the deer's back, driving it to earth. His knife flashed, and in a second the animal's throat was slit. Emma gasped, stunned by the speed and ferocity of the act. She watched as the man knelt and placed a hand on the animal's head. She could see his lips moving, whispering. Then he looked up. His eyes met hers. She knew he meant her to approach. Her legs shaking, Emma walked over. Steam was rising from the cut in the animal's neck, and the smell of blood was strong in the air. She wasn't scared. Too much had happened in the last few days for her to be scared now. But there was something so naked about the scene, about the man and the stag and the kill in the hushed wood. It made her heart tremble. She stopped beside the body. The man's eyes had not left her.
"Do not be frightened."
Emma wanted to tell him she wasn't, but she found she couldn't speak. The man's large hand still rested on the deer's head.
"The wolves last night were evil. I felt no regret in killing them."
His voice was low and strong.
"But to kill a creature such as this is a sacred thing. It must only be done when there is true necessity, and you must ask pardon of the spirit."
He looked at her for understanding, and Emma nodded, reminded again of the deep, dark eyes of the lion. The man cut into the stag's abdomen and began to clean it. He was expert and did it quickly and without waste. Emma felt queasy watching him remove its organs and place them in a lined leather bag, but she didn't turn away. She told herself if Michael were here, he would be throwing up non-stop, and that made her feel better.
"Last night, with the wolves, you were scared?"
Emma considered lying, but then said,
"Yes." "You did not show it."
Emma thought she heard his approval, and warmth exploded in her chest. The man said,
"You are not from Cambridge Falls."
It wasn't a question, but he expected her to respond.
"No, we're from, well, we're kind of from, you know, the future."
She was feeling easier now.
"See, we found this magic book, and if you put a photo in it, you go to wherever the photo was taken, right? And that's what we did. We put the photo in the book, and so we're here."
The man had stopped what he was doing and was staring at her. In a flash, Emma knew two things. The first was why she'd followed him. It was because the night before, as he'd carried her through the rain, she'd felt safer than she had in her entire life. The second thing she knew was that suddenly, the way he was looking at her, the blood on his hands, the knife, the two of them alone in the woods, she did not feel safe at all.
"Sorry," she said quietly. "I could have told that better."
She fought the urge to run. She forced herself to stand there, staring into his eyes across the still warm body of the stag. The moment passed. Nodding slowly, the man wiped the blade of his knife on the animal's hide, then replaced it in its sheath.
"My name is Gabriel."
"I'm Emma."
He stood, lifting the deer onto his shoulder.
"Let us return. Your brother and sister will be awake. We have much to talk about.
The first thing Kate saw was the man coming around the bend of the path with a body over his shoulder. Oh, no, she thought. Then Emma appeared, trotting beside him. She smiled and waved. As the man went to hang up the stag in a shed attached to the cabin, Emma excitedly told Kate and Michael everything that had happened. That the man's name was Gabriel, about him killing the stag. How, if Michael had been there, he would have thrown up.
Hey, sorry, Emma said, but you would have. You shouldn't have gone off, Kate said. It's dangerous.
Emma nodded and tried her best to look remorseful.
What did you tell him about us? Oh, you know, that we were from the future and about the book.
Kate noticed Emma shifting about nervously.
What is it? Nothing. Just when I told him about the book, he acted kind of weird. Weird? How? Oh, you know.
Emma kicked at the mud and shrugged.
Like he was thinking about killing me or something. What?
Just then the man returned and called them to breakfast. They ate at the wooden table in the cabin. The man, or Gabriel, since that was how Emma at least had begun to think of him, had changed his shirt and washed the blood from his hands in the stream that ran behind the cabin. He told them they couldn't risk a fire during the day. The screechers would be abroad in the valley searching for them and would see the smoke. For breakfast, they would have to make do with bread and honey and the berries he and Emma had picked on their way back to the cabin. Kate and Emma hadn't had a full meal since breakfast the morning they'd gone into the past, and Michael's meals with the Countess, while lavish, had been magical concoctions where you gorged yourself, then felt ravenous 10 minutes later. But still, it was only when the man had laid the food on the table that the children realized how hungry they were. Within moments, they were cramming huge, honey-globbed chunks of bread into their mouths, followed by handfuls of berries that exploded between their teeth. At one point, Gabriel brought over a pitcher of milk, which he poured into 4 cups. Michael reached for his, slurped half of it in a single gulp, then turned and sprayed it across the cabin. The man looked unconcerned.
"Goat's milk," he said. "Sour, if you're not used to it. Drink. It's good for you."
And, to Michael's dismay, the man refilled his cup. Emma swallowed a large mouthful and did her best not to wince.
"It's great," she said, forcing a smile. "I love it."
Though she ate as greedily as her brother and sister, Kate kept one eye on their host. He was sitting across from them, taking up an entire side of the table, and seemed very intent on his meal. Finally, the man licked the last dabs of honey from his fingers, drank off his milk, and, running the back of his hand across his mouth, sighed.
"Now," he said, "tell me everything."
Normally, Kate would have resisted such a command, her natural impulse being to reveal as little about herself and her siblings as possible. But as the man turned his gaze upon her, Kate felt what Emma had felt earlier, that something about him demanded the truth. So once again she told their story, how their parents had disappeared, how the three of them had moved from orphanage to orphanage, how they'd finally been sent here to Cambridge Falls.
"And the Cambridge Falls of your time," the man said. "What is it like?"
Kate described a bleak wasteland where the trees had vanished and the people were frightened and unfriendly. She said how there was no dam stopping up the river, and the water ran down the gorge and plunged over the cliffs. She said the only animals were the wolves that prowled the night. She said there were no children.
"What of the witch?"
The man's voice was even, but they could see the hatred in his dark eyes.
"Is she still there?"
Kate shook her head. The first they'd learned of the Countess or her screechers was when they'd found the book and travelled into the past.
"Tell me about this book."
With Emma and Michael now starting to chime in, she told about exploring the house, about the door in the wine cellar that led to the underground room, about Michael coming upon the book.
"We thought maybe it was Dr. Pym's study or something," Emma said.
"Dr. Pym?"
"Yeah, he runs the orphanage. Supposedly he's a wizard, though all we've seen him do is start a fire."
"You're Dr. Pym," Gabriel said. He is an old man with great white eyebrows.
Yeah, Emma exclaimed. You know him?
The man ignored her question.
Finish your story.
So Kate told about going into the past, about watching him try to assassinate the Countess, how Michael was left behind, how she and Emma got another photo from Abraham so they could rescue him. Then we went back into the past.
You left something out?
No, I didn't.
You're lying.
She's not, Emma said. I was there, that's what happened.
Then there is something she hasn't told you.
Kate saw Emma look at her, confused, questioning. She had wanted to skip this part. It scared her to think about it, and she didn't want to share that fear with Michael and Emma. But the man was giving her no choice. So, her heart racing, Kate told about putting her hand on the blank page of the book, about the visions she'd seen, about the blackness that had seeped into her fingers. Afterward, Emma and Michael stared at her, their mouths literally hanging open.
You saw dragons? Michael gasped. Fighting? What do you think that black stuff was? Emma asked. Maybe it was ink, huh? Like magic ink. And why didn't you tell us?
Kate started to explain. She didn't understand what it meant. She didn't want them to worry. But the man interrupted and told her to continue. He was looking at her more closely than ever. Kate felt Michael tense as she arrived at their capture by the secretary, and his own betrayal, and though for his sake she glossed over it as best she could, once again the man pounced.
You helped the witch to lure and trap your sisters?
Kate saw Michael open his mouth. She could see the arguments forming on his lips, the explanations why, at that time, turning over his sisters had been a reasonable course of action. Then he sighed and looked down at the table.
Yes.
A sound almost like a growl escaped from the man.
We've forgiven him, Kate said quickly.
She went on telling how the Countess had taken the book only to have it disappear in front of their eyes, how she'd locked them in with the other children, how Abraham had smuggled them out through secret passages. She told about running through the forest and hearing the howl of the first wolf. And there she stopped. He knew the rest. The man picked up a crust of bread and dunked it in the honey jar. Kate felt drained. Telling the story had been difficult. She looked across at the man. He was chewing, pondering what he'd heard. Her gaze traveled to his scar. It started an inch from his left eye and curved crookedly down to his jaw. It gave his face a terrifying aspect. But even so, it occurred to Kate that he was broodingly handsome. Her face flushed hot, and she stared into her lap. What was wrong with her? Here they were, trapped in the past, pursued by who knew how many of those awful screeches. What was she doing, thinking about how good-looking this man was?
So, will you tell us your story, then? Emma asked. Please.
Kate and Michael gaped.
What? Emma said. You said please, Michael said. So? You never say please. Yes, I do. No, Kate said, you don't. I didn't think she knew what it meant, Michael said. Oh, shut up, Emma muttered.
Very well,
the man said, the rumble of his voice silencing them.
You have told the truth. You deserve the same in return. What is it you wish to know?
Kate thought their first priority should be finding out who this man really was.
What's your name?
Gabriel Kitigna Tesuat.
Michael giggled.
Really?
Gabriel looked at him.
Because it's a very nice name, Michael added quickly.
Kate asked if the man was from Cambridge Falls. He shook his head.
For centuries there were two human communities in these mountains, Cambridge Falls and my people. The way it is handed down, one day a magician came to our village. He told us how in every land the magical world was withdrawing. He said the rest of the world would no longer be able to see us. They would forget we had ever existed. We and the people of Cambridge Falls were given a choice. resettlement somewhere out in the normal world, or we could stay in our mountains and be hidden for all time. We both chose the latter.
He paused to refill his milk, and Emma leaned over, whispering to Kate and Michael.
I bet that magician was Dr. Pym. That's how we knew about him having white hair and all.
Kate shushed her. She was thinking how something about the man had hinted of another, older world. Now she understood why. She asked how he'd come to be there that day at the dam. Gabriel said that he periodically came to Cambridge Falls to spy on the Countess. He'd seen the witch and her secretary leave the mansion, and, curious, he had killed a screecher, dressed in its clothes, and followed them to the dam. Once there, he saw the Countess dangling a child off the edge. Before he knew what was happening, he was striding toward her with his sword raised to strike.
"And then she cast that spell on you," Emma said. "Otherwise, you'd have killed her for sure. I know it."
"When I awoke, I was in a cell," the man said.
His face grew dark, remembering.
"There was no light, and at first I did not know where I was. Then I felt everything move and heard the lapping of water."
"The boat!" Emma cried. "Abraham told us about it. He said it's a prison where they torture people, do experiments on them and stuff."
"It is not a prison," said Gabriel. "It is a cage for a monster."
It seemed to grow very still in the cabin.
"The first thing I did was to call out and see if I was alone. No one answered, but I thought I heard something below. The stench in that place, so thick with death."
He closed his eyes, as if waiting for the smell to clear. After a few seconds, he went on,
"The floor was an iron grid, and I could see that a large cage ran below all the cells on my level. I called again. Again, no answer. I became very quiet. Then I heard it, deep in the blackness. Raspy breathing, the clicking of claws, and a faint whispering voice promising itself, 'Soon, soon.' And I knew then what the creature below me knew. I was not a prisoner. I was food."
If it had been quiet before, it was nothing compared to when the man finished speaking. Finally, Emma said almost hopefully,
"Maybe it was a screecher."
"No, this was something else."
"But why would the Countess keep it on a boat, whatever it was? Why not keep it under the mansion?" Kate asked.
The man shrugged.
"I bet it's hydrophobic," said Michael.
Kate asked him to explain. Michael coughed and pushed his glasses up his nose. Emma groaned. That was the signal he was going to tell them something really boring he'd read in a book.
"In stories, it's not uncommon for witches and evil wizards to keep a monster around, kind of like a weapon of last resort. Of course, dwarves never did that sort of thing. They were too honorable."
"Michael."
"Right. Well, the thing about having a monster around, whether it's a werewolf or a dragon or a mud troll or whatever, lots of times it ends up attacking its master. So people built in all these protections and safeguards. I was thinking, if this monster is afraid of water," that's what hydrophobic means.
"That's what hydrophobic means,"
mimicked Emma under her breath. Michael ignored her.
"The Countess could control it by keeping it on the boat. Then, if she needs it, she just has it brought ashore."
Gabriel nodded.
"You are probably right."
"Really?"
Emma said, unable to hide her annoyance.
"Are you sure?"
"But how did you escape?"
Kate asked.
"The cage has not been built that can hold me."
He said it as if no further explanation was necessary. And looking at him, Kate agreed.
"So, are you going to try and kill the Countess again?"
Emma asked.
"We can help. We'd love to kill her."
"No," he said. "I will return to my village. I must tell them what you have said. The things that will happen to our forests. And our wise woman must be consulted about this book the witch desires. She will know what it is."
"What's a wise woman?"
Emma asked.
"It's a woman that does magic," Michael said.
I wasn't asking you,
Emma growled.
He is right, Gabriel said.
Emma glared at Michael. Kate was quiet. An idea had come to her. She held it carefully in her mind, afraid it might slip away. Now she spoke.
Take us with you.
The man shook his head.
I will have to move quickly, and the path I will take is dangerous. You will be safer here. With the stag I killed, there is food enough. The stream behind the cabin is safe to drink. Wait till night to light a fire. As soon as I can, I will send someone to look after you.
But, Kate said, we...
Emma said,
no!
And he slammed his huge hand flat on the table, rattling the plates and cups and ending the discussion. He stood and took a brass telescope from the wall, saying that there was a ridge above the cabin from which he could see the entire valley. He would make sure there were no screechers nearby. Then he must leave. The moment the door shut, Emma turned to Michael.
It's your fault he won't take us.
What?
He hates know-it-alls. He told me this morning after he killed that deer. He said, I really hate know-it-alls. Right. I'm sure he said that. Quiet, Kate hissed. We have to make him take us. He said this wise woman will know about the book. Maybe she even knows where it is. We've got to find it before the Countess does. That's the only way we're ever going to get home.
Kate paused. She just had a horrible thought.
Emma, you still have the photo, right? The one to get us back.
For several stomach-churning moments, they watched Emma dig in her pockets. Finally, she pulled out the photo. It was creased down the center and bent at one corner. A bit of pink gum was stuck to the back. But there was Kate, sitting in their bedroom, looking out at them from the future. The children released a silent, collective sigh.
Emma, Kate said gently, maybe I should hold on to it.
Yes, please,
Michael muttered.
Fine.
Emma pulled off the gum and handed her sister the photo. Smoothing it out as much as possible, Kate tucked it into the inner pocket of her jacket.
Returning to the matter at hand, Michael said, how are we going to get him to take us?
As it turned out, this particular problem solved itself, for just then they heard pounding footsteps, the door slammed open, and Gabriel rushed in and said,
we're leaving, now!
Before the children could even begin to wonder what had changed his mind, the cry of a screecher echoed up the valley.
20 of them,
Gabriel said, as he took down a long canvas-wrapped object that had been tucked among the rafters.
They will be here in 3 minutes.
What are we going to do?
Michael asked.
How are we going to get out? We'll fight our way out,
Emma said, her voice full of passionate anger.
Won't we, Gabriel?
But he had gone to the fireplace, and now he put his hand against a stone and pushed. Very slowly, with a rough, rock-on-rock scraping, the entire hearth swiveled, exposing a dark passage leading straight back into the mountain.
This way,
he said. Chapter 10. The Maze. Once in the passageway, the man ordered Kate, Michael, and Emma to stay exactly where they were. Then he pushed the hearth back into place with a dull thud. The children stood there in the darkness, breathing stale air, listening to Gabriel move about. He struck a match and used it to light two battered gas lanterns that had been hanging on the wall. He gave one to Kate.
Where are we?
She asked. With the shadows from the lamp playing over his scar, Gabriel looked more fearsome than ever.
We are in the place where you are quiet and do as I say. Come.
He turned and headed down the passage. They arrived at a set of jagged stairs, at the bottom of which was an iron door with a series of bolts and locks. Gabriel opened it, ushered the children through, then closed and locked the door behind them. They were now in a different tunnel. It was wide and had rough-looking walls. Two iron rails ran down the center of the floor. After they'd been walking for perhaps 15 minutes, Kate ventured again.
So, really, where are we?
For a moment, she thought the man simply wasn't going to answer. Then he said,
One of the old mining tunnels used by the town. It will lead us through the mountain to the valley where my village lies.
They kept on. Gabriel and Emma in front, the tunnel was wide enough to walk two abreast, and Kate and Michael following. Back in the cabin, when she'd told her brother and sister her plan for getting them home, Kate had tried to sound confident. But in her heart, she suspected that even if Gabriel's wise woman could tell them something useful, the chances of the three of them finding the book before the Countess and all her screeches were slim indeed. As they walked, Gabriel surprised Kate by beginning to speak. He told them about the mountains, how they were full of deep old magic, and as such had to be respected. He said that the men of Cambridge Falls had always known there were places one did not dig, things one did not dare disturb, such as the Hanuddin, hope killers, they were called. Half-alive ghouls who came up behind you in the darkness and whispered that all the worst thoughts you ever had were true. Your friends were disloyal, your wife did not love you, your children would grow to hate your name. Men would blow out their lamps and sit down in the darkness, to be found months or even years later, having starved to death on the spot. There were the Salmaktar, an ancient race, little more than beasts, who had supposedly given birth to goblins ages ago and lived down deep below the roots of the mountains. They had no eyes, but huge bat-like ears, and they moved around making clicking noises, listening to the sounds echo off the rock walls, their razor-sharp teeth and claws able to cut through iron and bone.
"But even such creatures," Gabriel said, "are part of the balance. It was different when the witch came. Everything changed."
He fell silent, and for a while there was only the crunch of their footsteps along the gravel floor. Kate found herself thinking about the 20 Moram Cadi the man had seen in the valley. She imagined them tearing apart the cabin, finding the secret door behind the hearth, then pouring one after another into the tunnel, their yellow eyes scouring the darkness. She knew this kind of thinking wasn't helpful, but she couldn't stop herself. What finally brought her back was Gabriel. He was speaking again, describing something as a pair of invisible hands reaching into your chest and crushing your heart and lungs. He was describing, Kate realized, the shriek of a screecher.
"But it is an illusion," he said. "The pain comes entirely from your mind."
"What?"
The suddenness of her anger surprised her.
"You're saying we imagined it? That all those kids at the dam imagined it?"
"I did not say that," the man corrected. "The scream creates panic and fear in your mind. So great is the fear that your body begins to shut down. That is the pain you feel. It is real, but it comes from your mind."
"So how do you stop it?" Michael asked. "By killing screeches," Emma said, "obviously."
"Except the scream has no physical power to hurt you," Gabriel explained. "Then learn to manage your fear. That is the only way," he added, "besides killing them."
Kate thought of telling the man that it was probably a lot easier to manage your fear when you were a sword-wielding, wolf-killing giant. But Michael was already scribbling in his journal, murmuring, "Manage fear." And she let it go. Instead, she asked the question that had been troubling her since the night before.
"Do you know if there's someone else besides the Countess? We heard her say something about her master."
"That's right," Michael said. "She and the secretary, they both said it. I have it in my notes."
Gabriel shook his head.
"I have not heard of any master. We will ask the wise woman. It is possible she..."
He stopped and turned, staring back down the passage. Everything about him was alert and tingling. Kate peered into the darkness, but the tunnel was as silent and still as a tomb.
"Maybe it's one of those goblin bat things," Michael whispered. "Quiet."
Gabriel handed his lantern to Emma and unwrapped the length of canvas. It was not, as Kate had suspected, a sword. What appeared was more like an extremely large machete. The blade was slender near the handle, then expanded as it lengthened, so that the end was very wide indeed, It was made of some dark metal, and the edge gleamed in the lamplight. Gabriel took a step forward. Still, nothing moved. Kate opened her mouth to ask what he thought he'd heard. Just as she did, the screecher materialized out of the darkness. It made no sound at all, but charged toward them, sword raised, yellow eyes glowing. Later, Kate would reflect that this was what had been most terrifying, for, as awful as their screams were, at least they gave you time to run. Now, already, it was too late. She could only stand there and await the blow. There was a loud, reverberating clang as Gabriel's blade met the other's, and the creature's sword shattered. A moment later, the two halves of its body lay on the floor, hissing, an evil-smelling smoke rising from its corpse. Kate looked at Gabriel. His blade was smoking as well. He had sliced clean through the screecher, sword, body and all. He said, "Run!" They obeyed, running as they never had before, through winding corridors, upstairs, downstairs, around blind corners, Gabriel always urging them faster and faster. The tunnel kept splitting, but he seemed to know where he was going. "Left! Right! That passage there! Go!" It wasn't long before they heard the first scream. More soon joined in, the inhumans shrieking, billowing down the narrow tunnels. Kate felt weakness sweep through her, and she almost stumbled. She glanced at Michael and Emma and saw they were struggling as well. She tried telling herself the pain was only in her mind, that the screams couldn't hurt her, but it made no difference. She still felt as if she was running uphill with a stone upon her back. And all the time, the screaming grew closer. They emerged suddenly from one of the tunnels and found themselves at the edge of a huge underground chasm. They could see neither the ceiling nor the bottom, nor even the other side. A rope bridge extended out into the darkness and disappeared. The shrieking in the tunnels was louder than ever. The horde would be on them in moments. "Go!" Gabriel commanded. "I will hold them as long as I can. Follow the tunnel at the other end of the bridge. You will come to a chamber. Take the second passage to the left. Keep going, always choosing the second left. Once outside, you'll find a trail that leads to my village. Stray at all, and you will be lost forever. Go now, I will catch up."
"But,"
Emma protested.
"Go, there's no time."
"Come on."
Kate seized Emma's hand and pulled her onto the bridge. Michael was already running ahead. The bridge swung beneath them as their feet pounded on the wooden slats. Halfway across, Kate felt an icy draft rise up out of the darkness. The air had a cold, ancient dampness that made her skin crawl.
"Look!"
Emma yelled. Kate turned. Two screechers had emerged from the tunnel behind them. As they charged, Gabriel moved forward to meet them. Blades flashed and rang. Gabriel ducked a blow, grabbed one of the creatures, and hurled it into the abyss. Its scream was swallowed by the blackness.
"Come on!"
Kate cried, pulling at her sister's hand. They ran the last 20 yards to where Michael was waiting. It was now too dark to see Gabriel on the other side, but more screeches were apparently pouring out of the tunnel, as there were more cries and the clang of metal against metal was constant and furious. A deadly battle was taking place in utter darkness.
"We can't leave him,"
Emma cried, her eyes wild with desperation.
"We have to do something."
"There's nothing we can do," Kate said, "and he told us to go on, remember?"
"The entrance is right here,"
Michael called. Half dragging Emma, Kate led them down the passageway. Soon the sounds of the battle had faded, and after a minute of hard running, they came to the chamber Gabriel had told them about. It was a large, circular, high-ceilinged room with 6 identical doorways.
"We shouldn't have left him."
Emma had pulled free from Kate, and there were tears of frustration and shame in her eyes.
"He helped us, and we ran away like a bunch of cowards. We didn't have a choice."
"That's the doorway we want," Michael pointed. "Second on the left."
"Can we at least wait?"
Emma pleaded.
"Just for a second to see if he comes. Please, Kate. Just for a second."
Kate looked at the tears running down her sister's cheeks, She knew she should say no. They needed to put as much space between themselves and the screeches as possible. She sighed, just for a second. Watching Emma turn and stare down the dark passageway, Kate envied her. Emma lived at the furthest reaches of her feelings. She loved and she hated, and she didn't constantly question the thousand possible consequences of every action. Kate knew if she let her, she'd be back in an instant to help Gabriel, even if it meant certain death. Michael came up and coughed discreetly.
You need to get better about saying no.
Okay, Michael.
I'm just saying, because...
Kate gave him a look, and he evidently got the message, because he stepped away, murmuring something about the craftsmanship in the room being of a different level than the rest of the mine, and he was going to examine this cornering over here. Kate decided they would wait another 30 seconds. Then she would make Emma come away, even if she had to drag her. Her gaze happened down one of the dark passages to her right. The vision came without warning. She saw a room lit with candles. Two figures sat at a wooden table. One was a man with long ginger hair, dressed in a dark cloak. The other was in shadow. A package wrapped in linen sat on the table between them. Kate knew it was the book. From a long way off, Kate heard Michael telling Emma it really was time to go. Kate took a step closer to the doorway, and the vision became stronger. She could hear that a deal was being struck. The shadowy figure was agreeing that he and his people would hide and protect the book. In a voice like granite, he said,
"We will build a vault."
Before she knew what she was doing, Kate shouted, "Follow me!" and sprinted down the passage. A voice in her head screamed in protest. She was disobeying Gabriel's warning. They would all be lost forever. She had to stop, go back. But a stronger voice was saying that the book was out there, calling to her. And if she hesitated, if she paused to explain her vision to Michael and Emma, she would lose the connection, lose the book. So she ran. And from behind she heard shouts to stop, to wait, and then the sound of running feet. She came to another room, identical to the first, and with six more doors. She waited till the footsteps and cries of, "Kate, stop!" had almost reached her, before plunging into another passage. Somehow she knew exactly where to go. She ran for 5 minutes, 10, 15, through a dozen identical rooms with identical doorways, each time pausing long enough for the footsteps behind her to almost catch up, before diving through another door, trusting that her brother and sister would follow the glow of her lantern. As she ran, she continued to have visions. She watched the vault taking shape deep below the mountain. She watched the ginger-haired man, the book open before him, moving his fingers over the blank pages so that words and images would appear and fade. She watched, finally, as he stepped into the finished vault and placed the book on a pedestal in the center. Kate stopped. Her chest was heaving. The passage had ended abruptly in a rock wall. This wasn't right. She must have taken a wrong turn somewhere. But how was that possible? A hand seized her arm. Michael was bent over, gasping.
"Michael, this is it. I can..."
Michael shook his head.
"Emma."
"Emma? What do you..."
"I thought she was following, but she... I had to either go back, but you wouldn't stop."
He lowered his head, still trying to get his breath. There was no other light coming down the tunnel. No sound of footsteps.
"She must have gone," Michael panted, "to help Gabriel."
All thoughts of the book were swept from Kate's mind.
"We have to go back." "How? It's a maze. Didn't you see? Every room's the same. That's why Gabriel warned us. We'll never find our way back." "We have to. We..." "Kate!"
She turned. A line of black had appeared in the middle of the wall. The rock was splitting open. A wind swept through, and the flame in her lantern fluttered and went out. A voice like iron spoke in the darkness.
"Hold them!"
Chapter 11. The Prisoner in Cell 47. Gabriel stood with his back to the swinging bridge, his chest heaving, the haft of his falchion slippery with sweat. He had half a dozen cuts on his arms and a deep slash in his side. The swords of the Morum Cadi were poisoned. Any one of his wounds had the power to kill him, but Gabriel wasn't thinking about that. He had destroyed six of the monsters already. Four he'd cleaved through, two he'd thrown into the void at his back. And there were still more than a dozen clustered around him in a half circle, swords raised, yellow eyes glowing, their breath, or whatever they had that passed for breath, rasping through the cloth that covered their rotting skulls. They had only to advance, and they would overwhelm him. So, why had they stopped attacking? The answer revealed itself as a torch that emerged from the tunnel and bobbed toward the back of the throng. The screeches moved aside to allow the secretary to step through. The short man was breathing hard and mopping his brow with a lacy lavender handkerchief.
"My, my," he gasped. "All this running about. Must be a better way."
He waved his handkerchief at the screeches.
"My companions keeping you entertained, hmm? So, introductions first, yes? Gridley Cavendish, at your service."
He bowed and smiled his awful smile.
"And you are, my dear sir?"
Gabriel gauged his chances of reaching the man with a lunge. He thought he could make it, but in doing so he would leave himself open to the screeches.
"Come, come,"
Cavendish said, his voice slippery and coaxing.
"Clearly you are a person of substance. Escape the boat, able to kill screeches and wolves at will, not to mention the clever little passage behind your fireplace. I confess I almost missed it. Almost, but the Countess, so intelligent, yes. Fortunately, some time ago, condescended to enlighten my ignorance with a few simple spells, such as those that reveal secret doors and panels. Such radiance and foresight. Little wonder children love her. So, your name, sir?"
"Come closer, and I'll tell you," Gabriel said.
The secretary giggled and punched his leg a couple of times as if he found this very amusing, all the while shaking his head vigorously.
"A sense of humor to boot. Well, well, thank you for the invitation, but we do in fact see what you're thinking, yes? That long, sharp thing there, yes?"
He jabbed a crooked finger at Gabriel's blade and then, for some reason, touched the side of his nose. Gabriel was beginning to think the man was insane.
"Very well, no names. How about you simply tell us where the children are? Otherwise, I shall have to have my decaying friends here chop you into more manageable bits."
Gabriel's face betrayed nothing, but his mind was racing. The Countess wanted these children badly, so badly she had dispatched her secretary and 20 screeches. That was nearly the entire guard from the town. Was it just their connection to the book, or was there something else? Were the children important in some way? He sensed he had made a terrible mistake in leaving them.
"Send them across the bridge, I imagine, Into the maze. Dangerous, don't you think? So easy to get lost."
The secretary took one careful step closer.
"Perhaps we make a deal. These children mean nothing to you. You found them in the woods. Came to their aid. Understandable. Pursued by those terrible wolves. Anyone would have done the same. Help us find them. Do this," he wheezed, straining to maintain his grin. "And the Countess will give you whatever you desire. Wealth, power. She can be very generous."
The secretary had recklessly taken another step forward. A single stroke, and his head would fly from his shoulders. But Gabriel knew he would only have time for one blow before the screeches were on him. What would happen to the children then?
Tell the witch.
Yes?
The man Cavendish leaned forward eagerly.
I am coming for her.
He spun around and with one swipe of his sword severed the ties holding the bridge. Instantly it fell into the void, and Gabriel leaped, leaving behind the furious cries of the secretary. He reached out with his free hand, straining into the darkness. But there was nothing, just cold, black air. Then he was falling. He had failed everyone. The children would be on their own. His people. His hands smacked against a board. It slipped off. But Gabriel seized the next one, just as the bridge snapped taut. And then he was swinging forward. He struck the rock wall with shuddering force. He hung there for a second, getting back his breath. He saw the wavering torchlight high up the other side of the chasm. The secretary's hollow-sounding voice was screaming curses at him. Suddenly, purely on instinct, he lifted his knees just as a sword smashed into the planks where his feet had been. In the darkness below, Gabriel saw the yellow eyes of a screecher. It must have leaped after him and seized one of the ropes trailing from the bridge. Sheathing his weapon, Gabriel began to climb. He had no hope of fighting the screecher while hanging on the bridge. He needed to get to the top.
Gabriel!
He looked up. 40 yards above, illuminated in the glow of a lantern, the pale face of the younger girl, Emma, was peering over the cliff. His regret ascending on the children was instantly replaced by annoyance. He opened his mouth to scold her, but just then the screecher's sword struck again, the tip nicking the heel of his boot. He began to climb more quickly. He didn't notice Emma's face disappear behind the edge of the cliff. His feet were too large to fit in the narrow gaps between the slats, so he had to pull himself up hand over hand. Every slat he passed, he ripped away the board to make it more difficult for the screecher. But he could hear the creature climbing upward all the same.
Gabriel!
He didn't look up.
Gabriel!
Her voice was strained, insistent.
Gabriel!
He chanced to look, intending to tell her in very clear terms that any conversation would have to wait. She was standing at the edge of the cliff, struggling to hold a rock several times larger than her head. Seeing him look up, Emma let go of her burden. Gabriel swung himself out to the left. The rock plummeted past, missing him by inches, and caught the screecher full in the face, connecting with a crunching thump and knocking the creature off the bridge. Gabriel watched its body disappear into the void, then turned his gaze back to Emma. The girl waved at him, smiling.
It's okay. I got him.
Children, he thought. He quickly ascended the rest of the way and pulled himself over the edge. The girl was holding the lantern, her eyes bright with excitement. Gabriel looked around, still breathing heavily.
Where are your brother and sister?
I left them.
I told you to go on. You should not have come back.
The girl's smile vanished. She looked hurt.
Stop! There!
The secretary's thin voice carried across the chasm.
In the name of the Countess!
Come, Gabriel said. We have to move.
He started off, but the girl turned her back on him and crossed her arms.
I saved your life. I think you could at least say thank you.
Gabriel was tempted to pick her up and carry her. Any moment the secretary and his Moramkadi would begin looking for another way across the chasm. Yet, in spite of himself, he found he was smiling.
You are right, he said. I am in your debt.
Emma glanced at him, as if to make sure he was serious. Then she nodded.
You're welcome. But you're not in my debt or anything. It makes us even, is all. Now, I think we should probably get going.
A good idea, Gabriel said, as if he himself had not just suggested the same thing.
What are you smiling at?
Emma demanded.
Nothing.
Uh-huh. Well, let's...
There was a swishing through the air, then a soft thunk, and Emma gasped and staggered back. Gabriel caught her before she fell. 12 inches of black arrow protruded from her back. Another 2 feet stuck out of her stomach.
Gabriel!
Her eyes were huge and terrified. Seizing the lantern, Gabriel gathered the small girl in his arms as quickly and carefully as he could. The secretary was screaming on the other side of the chasm. It sounded as if he were admonishing the creatures.
"Shh," he said gently, as Emma whimpered in pain. "I have you now."
And he carried her off into the passageway. Their hands and feet were tied. Hoods were drawn and knotted over their heads. Everything had taken place in utter darkness, so that Kate still had no idea who their captors were. But now torches were being lit. She couldn't see them. It was an unusually thick hood. But she could feel the heat and hear the flames. Then she was picked up and slung across a shoulder, and they were moving, marching.
"Michael," she called out, "are you there?"
"I'm here,"
he sounded a few feet behind her.
"I'm okay."
"Quiet,"
barked a gruff voice. An hour passed, maybe more. It was impossible to tell in such darkness. Kate's ribs rubbed painfully against her captor's shoulder, and she shifted about to relieve the pressure. She had quickly given up on trying to keep track of where they were heading. All she knew was that every step was taking them farther and farther from Emma and the hope of ever being reunited. She had to bite her lip to keep from crying. She didn't want Michael to hear her and despair. Finally, the gruff voice called for a halt. Kate was set on a stone floor. Her hood was unknotted and removed. She blinked, unable to focus in the sudden glare of the torches. Michael was beside her, having his hood removed as well.
"Michael," she whispered, "are you okay?"
"Yeah, my ribs hurt, but..."
His mouth fell open. As Kate watched, his eyes expanded to an unnatural, almost alarming size.
"Duh," he bubbled, "duh. Michael, what is it? What's wrong?"
"Duh."
Kate turned and, her eyes having adjusted, saw a dozen short, stocky, bearded men gathered about them in the tunnel. For the most part, the bearded men were paying little or no attention to the children. Some had taken out food. A few were in conversation or sharpening weapons. Many had pulled out long, thin pipes and were starting to light them. All of them, Kate noticed, had short swords and fearsome-looking axes stuck in their metal belts.
"They're dwarves,"
Michael gasped, finally managing to form the words. They were, indeed, dwarves, with beards and axes and armor, exactly as Michael had always described them. Kate didn't know why she was surprised to find out that dwarves actually existed. From the moment she and Michael and Emma had discovered that magic was real, it should have been logical that dwarves might be real as well. Her only defense was that it had been a very busy couple days.
"I always knew," Michael murmured. "I mean, I didn't know. I just hoped."
He stared about dreamily, repeating,
"Dwarves."
One of the troops stepped away from the others. He was stocky, though they were all stocky to some degree, and had a weathered face and a long reddish beard that was braided into neat plaits. He knelt before the children, setting his helmet on the floor with a light clank, then cleared his throat.
"Now then."
It was his voice that had been giving orders.
"Let's have it."
Kate was confused.
"Have what, sir?"
"Your story,"
he said, pulling off his mace gloves.
"How you came to be knocking about our territory, trespassing the like."
At the word trespassing, there was general harumphing among the dwarfs.
"We weren't trespassing," Kate said. "We... you're a dwarf,"
Michael blurted out. The red-bearded dwarf glanced at Michael. He took in the boy's wide, goofy grin and dazed expression, and apparently decided to ignore this rather obvious remark. He turned back to Kate.
"Oh, you weren't, were you? So you had permission. Let's see it, then. You have a letter of passage, I assume?"
"Well, no, we don't."
"No letter of passage?"
"No."
"No visa, transit papers? No magical golden ring given your ancestors centuries ago by a dwarfish king granting you rights of access to all dwarfish lands?"
No.
"Then that, my girl, means you was trespassing."
This second, more forceful trespassing was followed by even more harumphing from the others.
No, the dwarf said with an air of satisfaction, as we've settled that you're a pair of lowly trespassers.
You're dwarves, Michael exclaimed. All of you.
The red-bearded dwarf cocked an eyebrow and nodded at Michael.
He simple or something?
No, Kate said. He's fine. He...
She hesitated, saying that Michael just really liked dwarves. She had a feeling this red-bearded dwarf might find it condescending. He seemed a little prickly.
He's never met a dwarf before.
Well,
the dwarf said, smoothing down his beard.
Then it's a great day for him, ain't it? So, what business did you have trespassing in our lands?
There were echoes of,
Aye, aye, what business indeed, you trespassers?
We weren't trespassing, Kate protested. We were lost.
You hear that, boys?
The dwarf called over his shoulder.
It's the old we were lost story. A couple of lost little lambs we got here.
The dwarves roared with laughter. The red-bearded dwarf shook his head.
Oh, you'll have to do better than that, my girl. Much better indeed. The last fellow who was so-called lost found his way well enough. That's right, found his way to the edge of my axe.
At this, the dwarf leapt up, whipped his axe from his belt, and swung it in a wide arc just above the children's heads, so close that Kate and Michael both felt the wash of air as the blade passed over them. Kate had no idea what her and Michael's faces looked like following this, but it was enough to send the dwarves off into more peals of knee-slapping laughter. It occurred to Kate that this was not at all the behavior she would have expected from dwarves.
Stop laughing, she demanded. It's not funny.
Which, of course, just made them laugh the more.
There were screechers after us.
Silence. The red-bearded dwarf, his face serious, leaned in close.
Screechers, you say? In dwarfish land?
Kate nodded.
Let's have this cock-and-bull story, then. But be quick, and try not to tell too many lies.
It's not a lie,
Kate said, aware, even as she said it, that she was planning on a few strategic omissions. She told him that they'd been prisoners of the Countess and had managed to escape. She said that as they were fleeing, they'd stumbled into an old mining tunnel. A band of screechers had come after them, chasing them across the rope bridge and into the maze. That was the term Michael had used, and it seemed to fit. In the maze, they'd been separated from their little sister. Kate did not mention Gabriel or the book, or that they were from the future.
Your sister, said the dwarf. So there's another of you.
Yes, she's the youngest. You have to let us go find her.
Well, your story's full of lies and omissions. That much is apparent. But I can't argue that a child shouldn't be wandering out there alone. Even a low-down criminal trespassing child. Better off in our dungeons. No doubt the Salmaktar have gotten her by now.
The Salmaktar, Kate said, remembering the creatures Gabriel had told them about.
The ones with no eyes and large, bat-like ears. The ones with claws that could slice through bone.
I thought they live deeper down.
They've been growing bold of late, pushing up into our territory. That's why we've been out on patrol.
The dwarf's face seemed to cloud over.
It's her fault, the witches. Disgraceful it is, the whole miserable.
He trailed off, muttering a string of unintelligible words, of which Kate could only pick out king and witch and misbegotten.
My lord,
Michael was suddenly struggling to his knees.
I fear we have not properly introduced ourselves. My name is Michael P. This is my sister, Catherine. We are alone and in great danger. And, in the name of King Ingmar the Kind, we humbly throw ourselves on your mercy and beseech your help in this our hour of need.
The dwarves all stopped and looked at him. Kate was equally amazed, and then, as one, the dwarves burst out laughing again.
Did you hear him?
called the red-bearded dwarf to the others, who were really too busy laughing to hear much of anything.
"In the name of King Ingmar the Caned," he mimicked, shaking his head and appearing to wipe away a tear. "Aye, it's too good. It's too good."
Michael looked confused and a little wounded.
"No, no," said the red-bearded dwarf, placing a stubby hand on his shoulder. "We're just having fun. What you said was very fairly spoken, and in all the correct forms of address, if a bit out of the mood, perhaps. It was just a shock, it coming from a little human lad like yourself. So you know something about our history, then?"
Yes, Michael stammered. "Your history, your traditions. I know what to bring when you go to a dwarf's house for dinner. I can tell you how dwarf inheritance law works. I've memorized the lyrics to 17 different dwarf drinking songs. I know everything there is to know about dwarves."
"Do you know?"
The dwarf brought his face close to Michael's.
"Then tell me, lad, what's the one thing we value above all else?"
Kate was expecting Michael to say hard work or craftsmanship or devotion to duty or any of the qualities he was always going on about. But he said something she'd never once heard him mention. And when he spoke, his voice was very quiet.
"I can tell you that. It's the thing I like best about dwarves. The most important thing to you is family."
Kate felt as if the floor had disappeared.
"The clan," he went on, "the family is the basis of dwarf society. You look out for each other. Once someone's a part of your clan, they're in it for life. You never leave him, ever."
Kate could feel tears coming to her eyes. All these years, all Michael's talk about dwarves, and she finally understood. A family that would never leave you. Had her hands not been tied, she would have put her arms around him and told him that he had that family in her and Emma, and he always would.
"You've struck the mark," the dwarf said.
Kate could see the other dwarves nodding in the background.
"But how do you know so much about us? You're a little on the short side, perhaps, but I don't see anything particularly dwarfish about you. Oh, if you look in my bag..."
Michael wiggled about to bring his bag forward, and the dwarf reached in and pulled out a small, thick book that Kate recognized immediately.
"The Dwarf Omnibus by G.G. Greenleaf," exclaimed their red-bearded captor. "I remember this well enough. Old G.G. was quite the clever dwarf." "Wait, you mean..."
Michael was nearly beside himself.
"G.G. Greenleaf was a dwarf? My book was written by an actual dwarf? Was G.G. Greenleaf a dwarf? Listen to him! Course he was a dwarf! Why, this is every dwarf child's required reading. But how did a human lad like you come upon it?" "It was my dad's. He left it to me. The only thing he left me."
The tunnel had suddenly become very quiet.
"Truth is, I don't really remember him. Not really. That book's all I know about him."
It was a long moment before the red-bearded dwarf spoke, and his voice was gentle.
"Must have been an interesting man, your father. I'm beginning to think you're not a moron child, after all. Last question. How do you feel about elves?"
Kate saw the dwarves all lean slightly forward, watching Michael.
"Well, to be honest," Michael said, "I think they're kind of silly."
A great cry went up among the dwarves, and the red-bearded dwarf, followed by 6 or 7 others, came forward and slapped him hard on the shoulder.
"Silly is exactly the word for them," cried the red-bearded dwarf. "Little show ponies they are."
A few of the dwarves were now imitating elves, pretending to comb their hair, or tease their eyebrows, or batting their eyelashes and prancing about on their tiptoes. Kate was beginning to think that as silly as elves might be, Dwarves had to be even sillier.
"You're a good lad," said the dwarf. "My name is Robbie McClower. I extend you my hand in friendship. Oh, your hands are tied, aren't they? Well,"
and he clapped Michael on the shoulder again.
"So," Kate said, "will you let us go then?"
"Oh, no, lass. I can't do that, I'm afraid. You see, the king has issued a decree. All trespassers are to be captured and thrown in the dungeon until he can interrogate them himself."
"But," Michael said, "we're not dangerous, and we're only trespassers because we got lost."
"True," said the dwarf, Robbie McClower. "Or perhaps not true. Now, you say you started at the swinging bridge and then went into the maze. Well, 'twas a maze indeed you came through, built by the greatest dwarf architect centuries ago. Why, you could travel your whole life in there, 10 lives, and never find your way out. But the two of you went in one end and came bang up against our secret door. Do you know what the chances of that are? I wouldn't give a wooden galleon for the odds, and yet you somehow managed it. How is that, then?"
Kate shrugged.
"We just got lucky."
The dwarf shook a stubby finger.
"No, girl. You're hiding something."
Kate started to protest, but he held up his hand.
"Now, I've no love for the witch and her creatures, and think all alliances with such creatures are a betrayal of the great dwarfish tradition."
"Wait," Kate broke in. "An alliance? You're working for the witch? How could—"
The red-bearded dwarf raised his axe and slammed down the hilt with such force that it cracked the stone floor. The children felt the impact through their legs, and the dwarves who'd been talking fell silent as the sound echoed away down the tunnel.
"I'll see this once," growled Robbie McClower. "I do not work for the witch."
His eyes were dark with anger, and for a moment Kate was terrified. But then, just as quickly, the fury seemed to leave him, and he looked off, sighing.
"However, she and the king have an understanding of sorts."
"He's letting her dig, isn't he?" Michael said. "For the thing she's looking for. He's letting her dig in your lands."
The dwarf nodded.
"Aye."
"So you have to let us go," Kate said. "You know it's wrong."
The dwarf shook his head, lowering his voice so that only Kate and Michael could hear.
"No, lass. For though I may not personally agree..."